On the Wake of Late represents The Center with your host, DC Radical One.
Greetings, Black family, and welcome to On the Wake Up Radio. I am your host, DC Radical One, and you have entered the center. Shout out to our wonderful producer, Cindy Ashby. You can check out past broadcasts of On the Wake Up Radio on SoundCloud, YouTube, iTunes Podcast, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and now iHeartRadio at On the Wake Up Radio. Again, I am your host, DC Radical One, and you can follow me on Instagram at DC.Radical1. That's at DC.Radical1. Also, you can find me occasionally on Twitter at DC_Radical_ONE. That's at DC_Radical_ONE. And today's discussion, we're going to have a discussion about which way Black people should go. And the discussion is integration, separation, or repatriation. And this is, again, another discussion that I've been holding for a while, but it seems like, again, I feel like that I'm on time, because BB4A to Philly E Babe that's in the house. Greetings, brother Asar, and greetings to brother Edward Bailey, and also Spirit Mind Character Soul. Greetings to you, sister. But I feel like this is the right time for this discussion, because if we really look at our history, we'll realize that we've been here before. And like many times in history for Black people in America, especially, we find ourselves, at the crossroads. And as someone who is no longer in their 20s or their 30s, sometimes I feel like it's deja vu all over again. And the more that we, the more it's hard that things have changed, and you look around you, you see the change of technology, such as this form, something couldn't be done before. And you see change in the style of vehicles and changing a lot of things. What remains constant is the relationship here in America, and indeed around the world, between Black people and Europeans. Greetings, Lord Vale and the League, and a BB4ODA to Sister Misty, and everyone that's in the chat. You can tell Sister Misty happy birthday. Her birthday is coming up in a couple of days. And our wonderful producer, Cindy Ashby, her birthday was on the 3rd, so that was 2 days ago. So, you know, you can give those wonderful sisters, wish them a happy birthday. But as I was saying, with all those things changing, nonetheless, we find ourselves in the same situation that we found ourselves in for at least, and I'm going to minimalize it, 1776. And I'm using that date, of course, because this is the day after the Europeans here declared their independence from Europeans in their homeland. And while they were declaring their independence and fighting and shooting and doing things, to, you know, being revolutionaries, as they call it, the Revolutionary War, while they were doing all those things, we know what Black people were doing. Black people were being enslaved, Black people being brutalized, raped, and tortured. And then some Black people went out and fought for what they believed would be their freedom. And of course, here we are now, I believe 244 years later. And we find ourselves still being brutalized. We find ourselves still being murdered. We find ourselves still being raped and tortured and find ourselves still being lynched in 246 years later, after the Declaration of Independence and the Revolutionary War and the War of 1812, and all those things that have taken place in history here in America. Nothing has really changed for Black people. And in fact, it's so interesting because when we talk about integration, we tend to think of it as something new that occurred in the starting in the 60s. And really, the time frame I would look at really from the murder of Dr. Martin Luther King. And then we had, of course, the riots that took place. And then, of course, we had started to have the legislation being passed to break down the barriers of segregation. And from that time, we've been in a period, I guess, an integrated period. And I think it'll be good to take a look at what has taken place before that, because this is really, if we really understand our history, this is really the second integration period, if you will. During Reconstruction, many of the things that we now look at as advancements or signs of us being integrated were things that happened during Reconstruction. So if you go back and look at Reconstruction, we had our own politicians. We had our own towns. We had our own businesses. We had state politicians. And then we also had B.B. Fahodier, Sister Vanessa. And we also had representation in Congress. So we had Black Congress people, and I believe Black senators in Congress in the 1870s and 80s. Now that's, and somebody help me with my math, but that is almost 150 years ago. And so all of those things we had at that time, and of course we know as the military pulled out of the South, then Jim Crow law, and the Black codes began to be enforced, and then that put us almost into a second state of in fact, pseudo slavery for many people. For example, my family, my grandmother's father, he was a sharecropper. And my grandmother told me that the reason that they left out of that area of the South was because my grandfather challenged the landowner, of course, a European, because he was not giving the proper amount for the amount of crop that was given. So let's say if the rate was, I have no idea what the actual rate was, but I'm just using this. Let's say the actual rate was 5 cents per pound of crop. And my great grandfather brings in 100 pounds of crop, and then that would be, I believe, now help me out with my math again, I believe that'd be $5. And then the European would pay him $4 or something, you know, in essence, that's what it is, basically cheating him. And so my great grandfather challenged him on it, said, "Hey, you've been cheating the people." And the European's like, "Yeah, you're right, I have. And you know what? N-word, I'll give you your money. I'll give you the money I owe you, but you won't live long enough to spend it." And thus that began the sojourn of that part of my family out of the South. Now, the reason I bring that up is because we look today and we're still having to fight for what Malcolm X would call basic human rights. We're still paid less than a European. We're still jailed more than a European. We're still stopped by police more than European. And all these are per capita statistics. We're still brutalized. We're still murdered. So all these things, even after 60, nearly 60 years, I'll say approximately 55 years of integration, we're no better realistically than we were right after the end of Reconstruction. And I want to just look at some statistics real quick to make the point. And first of all, I need to give the definition of integration, because I did not give that. And I like to give definitions so we're all speaking the same language. And this is from dictionary.com. It says, and it has four different, and I'll go with the third and the fourth one. The third says to unite or combined. And the fourth says to give or cause to give equal opportunity and consideration to a racial, religious, or ethnic group, or a member of such group, i.e. to integrate minority groups into the school system. And it's interesting because when I looked at that, it says to either give or cause equal opportunity to the racial group or a member of the group. And I think that's very important, because if you only have to give it to a member of the group, then it gives the illusion that the group is making progress, but you're picking individual people for advancement. And so that seems to be one of the tactics that the European uses in order to appease us as a community. And then one of the things that they have done for a long time is whenever they discuss our history here, they point out to the first black, and you just fill in the blanks on who the person is. Doesn't matter the first black astronaut. It doesn't matter what it is. They'll show us that person, say, this is the first black person to do X, Y, Z. And then we're supposed to feel proud and feel like as a collective that we're making progress because this one person can fly a jet or go to the moon, or we have one black billionaire, or, you know, those types of things. And then, of course, when we look at it as a collective, a lot of times we have a black billionaire and he has a white wife, or we have a black billionaire, but he has really no connection to the black community. Or he's not making any investments in the black community, or things like that. So it always comes with a caveat. Exactly, sister. Symbolism. And so, again, like I said, it's sold to us as a collective, as progress. But in reality, collectively, we don't really change. And so I was looking at a study that was written February 26, 2018. And it was talking about the year 1968, and doing a comparison of where black people were then as compared to where they are now, and a comparison between black people and white people. And I just want to read a few of the points that they have here. So it says that African Americans today are much better educated than they were in 1968, but still lag behind whites in overall educational attainment. It says more than 90% of younger African Americans, 25 to 29, have graduated high school, compared with just over half in 1968, which means they've nearly closed the gap with white high school graduation rates. They are also more than twice as likely to have a college degree as in 1968, but still half as likely as young whites to have a college degree. Now it says the substantial progress in educational attainment for African Americans has been accompanied by significant absolute improvements in wages, incomes, wealth, and health since 1968. But black workers still only make 82.5 cents on every dollar earned by white workers. African Americans are 2.5 times as likely to be in poverty as whites. And the median white family has almost 10 times as much wealth as the median black family. With respect to home ownership, unemployment, and incarceration, America has failed to deliver any progress for African Americans over the last 5 decades. Now, this is a study that's not written by DC Radical One. It's not written by Straight Black Pride, not written by anybody that I'm connected with. This is a study, again, that I said it's 2 years old. It's called 50 Years After the Kerner Commission. And it says that, and it's from EPI.org, that in a large aspect, home ownership, unemployment, and incarceration, we have received zero progress whatsoever. Think about that. In the last 50 years. So the last 50 years is the period of integration. In key areas, home ownership, which is also connected with wealth, because again, for example, if you are a black person and you've owned your home your whole life and you pass on a home to your 25-year-old son, as an example, right? Your 25-year-old son does not have to pay for housing. He has a home. If he's already working and he has a college degree and he's already working, at that point, he's a step ahead of other people because he doesn't have to pay actual housing costs. He can either pay back the loans or he can begin to accumulate wealth on his own. He's only paying the property and the upkeep of the house. And then that allows him to advance economically and makes it more likely that he'll be able to find a mate, a complement, and more likely for him to get married because he has the foundation of what he needs, as opposed to that same 25-year-old man having to find the job, pay for housing, pay off student loans, and those types of things. So just home ownership and the passing down of a home gives the person a leg up in as far as building wealth. And this is something that Europeans have been able to do, not for one generation, but for multiple generations. And that's one of the main differences when you look at the wealth of the black community as opposed to the white community. This is one of the secrets that no one talks about. This is so deep. This is how it is. One of the things that they do, you can tell when gentrification is coming, is when they start calling you out the blue from numbers you don't recognize, asking you, hey, do you own this property here? Or you get you just start getting these random calls, or you start getting they start going around your neighborhood and leaving flyers and putting flyers up on telephone poles and like, we'll pay for your home and this type of thing. That's when you know they're coming. And a lot of times what's weird is you can sit outside all day and never actually see the person that puts this stuff up or passes this stuff out. It's the weirdest things. Like they come in the middle of the night or 4 o'clock in the morning or something and paper the neighborhood over. And I've seen it here in DC, and all of a sudden, like literally in the last month or so, I'm starting to see it in PG County. And for those who don't know, PG County is directly east of Washington, D.C., and where Washington, D.C. has been transformed by gentrification from a approximately 85% black city to approximately 45% black city. I believe that Prince George's County is still approximately 75% black. And the sister says, and life insurance. Indeed, and life insurance. That's another tool to keep and to advance wealth. And those are things that a lot of our people, they are a luxury to a lot of our people. So those are things you don't have. It's something as simple as having a will. So that, because another thing that happens is a lot of the reason that the houses go out of our community is because a person may have four children. Out of those four, they're only in contact with three. Those three children want to argue over who has the house. You end up selling the house to somebody, and then the house is out of the family. So instead of a grandchild even getting a house, if those three people have a house, instead of a grandchild getting a house, the house goes out of the family, and the wealth of the house goes out of the family. And then next thing you know, 10 years later, other people move in, and the house, even if it was a modest house, is worth twice as much as it was when you lived in it. And these are things that we miss out on because we're really not educated in how the greater society manipulates us into giving away some of our wealth that we accumulate, which really a lot of times isn't much. Literally the house a lot of times is usually paid off. Is literally like the only thing that the parent will have, and that's be the thing that we won't hold on to. Peace, brother Stephen. And so I just wanted to look at those basic statistics because I found it interesting, and it's so funny because I didn't actually even read that section of the article in the study before I saw that part that says no progress over the last five decades. So if we made no progress, the sister said, that would have been my family if I hadn't stood up to my siblings. I wouldn't have had a place to live. See, we're talking about real life examples. And then the sister, our wonderful producer has joined us. I just noticed. People are quick to sell everything to eat today, but if we keep our legacy, we can eat today, tomorrow, and have our children eat as well in the future. Absolutely. So with knowing that not only have we tried integration two times, and knowing that the first time it failed as soon as the military of the United States was removed from that area, and then knowing here we are 50 years into the second time, and according to Europeans, we have not made any significant progress. And of course, the fact that we're still being murdered, which if your life is not defended, even if you were accumulating wealth and everything like that, it really wouldn't matter. Now we have to look at what are the other options that are available or could be available on the table? And what I had wanted to do was, to me, these three options are symbolized by three people. Integration is symbolized by Dr. Martin Luther King. Separation is really symbolized by Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam, and young Malcolm X as a representation of that. And repatriation is symbolized by the Right Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. Now, all of us, whether you're black, white, whoever, if you go to school, we all learn about Dr. Martin Luther King. Every year, there's a holiday in honor of him, has a big giant statue down downtown in D.C. Of course, he has he's honored in his city in Atlanta. Everyone knows who he is. To a certain degree, almost everyone knows who Malcolm X is. black, white, whoever. Interestingly enough, very few people actually really know Elijah Muhammad. Even fewer people know Marcus Mosiah Garvey. So here's the way I look at things. If the European tells you about someone, it's because that's the person they want you to follow. And their ideas and their ideologies are the ideologies that they themselves can at least live with, right? The less they tell you about the person, that means that that person's ideas and their ideology is a person that they do not want you to deal with. Now, what's interesting is, I believe we're in a time, and people may think that this is crazy. I believe we're in a time and have a president who, out of maybe, probably, definitely the last 60 years, I'll say, more so than any president in the last 60 years, would be amenable to an idea that I had probably about 2 weeks ago. This was my idea. About 2 weeks ago, I was just sitting around thinking, and I said, and I never posted it. I meant to post it, and I just never posted it. I wonder what black people would do if Trump said the following. He put this on the table. If he put on the table that he would pay $1 million in reparations to every black man and woman and child in America, right? Or he would pay $5 million to every black woman and child in America who wanted to leave America on the condition that you cannot come back for one generation. You see what I'm saying? Now, the question is, with that, which one do you, in general, do you think people would take? Now, me personally, take the greater sum, and I have no problem leaving. I believe that Trump could actually sell this idea to his base more so than any Democrat could sell it, because no Democrat, I don't believe, would actually even propose it, because that would be a significant amount of their base leaving. So they would never agree to it. That's the part that's so hilarious. They would never agree to it. A significant amount of their base would be leaving. The Republicans would probably argue about the price, but the idea of removing even 20 million black people from America, I think they would absolutely go for it. But that idea is the idea of repatriation. The idea that the Nation of Islam espoused, and then, as far as I know, still espoused for, at this point, probably 90 years, close to 90 years, is the idea of a separate territory here within the confines of America for black people. Separation, meaning that black people will be given land and territory here to control as a sovereign nation, in essence. Now, the brother said, this is our land. I hear people saying that, but I look at things from a military standpoint. There's no disrespect to you, but anyone that says that, here's how I gauge whether or not they believe that. And we know for a fact it's not the Europeans' land, so that's not even worth debating. And the sister said the idea should be sent to him. What do we have to lose? We don't have anything to lose. When people say this is our land, my thing is that if someone actually believes that and they're not actually physically fighting for that concept, then I don't believe that they believe that. Because you see people fight to not be evicted. So if you say, oh, all this is our land and you're not fighting, then I find it difficult to believe the person. That's just me. Now, we understand from a certain aspect that African people are the first people on the planet. And we know this is not Europeans' land. All the places that Europeans have invaded, none of it belongs to them. And they're so late to the party that even Europe is not theirs. I understand that conceptually. But looking at it militarily, excuse me, the idea of 40 million disunited people displacing approximately 280 million people united for their survival is just not realistic. It's just not. We don't have any means of forcibly removing them from this area. And then even if you remove all the Europeans from this area, then you're going to have to fight all the Hispanics that are going to claim ancestral rights to the same area. Because that's why they're coming. They're coming back based on their ancestral rights. Whether you believe they have those or not, that's not even worth discussing. They believe it. And they're showing it by just flooding over the border. Right? So back to the separation concept, because we went through the integration aspect of it. So that was Amrullah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam. That was part of their core belief. The Republic of New Africa had a similar program where they believed that the southern states, in essence, the same states largely where we were enslaved, should be the states that should be given to us, excuse me, as ours for as our territory. Now, I have, for me personally, I like the idea as a transition. The only problem I have with it, of course, is we have a history that shows us that even if the United States government in itself were to agree to this, right? What, short of them placing military at the borders of the said land, let's say the land starts at North Carolina and ends at Louisiana, right? Let's say it starts there. We're going to have to depend on their military to keep their people off of our land. And that area contains the most racist, openly racist Europeans in America. Think about that. You're trying to get a sovereign nation in a space with the most openly racist people in America. Or you end up like the quote unquote Native Americans on a space with the least resources in America. You see what I'm saying? So that's the catch with the separation aspect. And then being realistic, if you're willing to physically separate from Europeans, do you still want to be that close to Europeans? I mean, I'm just saying. I would definitely, me personally, would rather have an ocean. Even in the modern time, of course, we're in the modern time. They can send drones. We know President Obama was drone striking everybody he could, anytime he could. Even with all that, I would rather have an ocean between me and the European. Now, some people may disagree. But again, I'm looking at it as, why be close enough to them that we have to wage war with them every single time? Because what happens is you get worn down over time and you don't allow yourself to build up your technology other than possibly your war technology. And that's a possible. Now, those were the two ideas that I'm familiar with. And even if they give you the land, one of the things, and I can't remember the exact number of years, but I believe that the Nation of Islam said basically that if they gave us the land, they also want the Europeans to basically fund us and give us what we need for 25 years in order to make ourselves sovereign. And to me, it'll be harder to get other Europeans to agree to that part than even the land, I think. Because they'll be like, okay, we'll give them the land to get them away from us. But then they're like, oh, wait a minute, we gave them the land and now we got to pay for this too? Oh, no, we're not doing that. And so now that leaves us with the last part of the equation. We discuss the integration, which is where we are, and we see where we are. We don't, you know, we've talked about Sister Breonna Taylor, we've talked about George Floyd, we talked about all those things in the last few shows. The sister said, I wouldn't trust anything from them in a space they control. Well, here's the thing. Now, I believe somebody else put it in the chat, but white supremacy is global. This is true. It's just a matter of, can you find a space that you can actually at least partially defend? And so when we talk about repatriation, which was the platform of the Right Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey over 100 years ago now, I think this is probably the most complex issue, and yet at the same time, this is probably the most complex issue, the least popular route, and the one most likely to be successful, which is why they never talk about it. Because here's the thing, combined around the world, there are approximately 1.25 billion African people. The reason that the European doesn't like when African people identify as African people is because suddenly you realize exactly how many people that you have on the board. One of the things that I've said is that what I really want to do, I really want to study the Chinese, because there was a time when what we know as China now wasn't one united sovereign entity. There was a time when what we know as China now was being dominated by Japan. Now, if you want to think about how ridiculous China being dominated by Japan is, pull up a map on your phone or laptop, look at the landmass, and then scratch your head. Now, China is the number two military and economic power in the world. Now, Chinese are proud to be Chinese, where when I was growing up, they were in the same way they were giving up doing blackface for us in the media, they were doing yellowface for them. And this was in the late 50s, Now, no one would dare do that because what? Again, military power, population, economic power. How have they done it? One of the ways they've done it is they've taken everything from Europeans and reverse engineered it and then began manufacturing it. Everything from the Europeans. And what's so funny is that African people could have done this a long time ago themselves, because literally I heard Dr. John Henry Clark mention this in the 90s, that we should just take whatever the European has, break it down, reverse engineer it, put it back together, and then make our own with our own improvements. This is something that's much easier. And the sister said, now they're in Africa. Exactly. They're in Africa because they're smarter than we are. Now, why did I say that? And the sister said, didn't China deal with their traitors and drug heads first as they built their military? I'm getting to that part. Sister ran ahead of me. In fact, let's deal with that. Because one of the reason they're able to do that is that they still had a relatively sovereign and they had a contiguous landmass. But one of the things in building up their society is they had to remove the people who were detrimental to the society. Like the sister said, the people that were on opium, the British used opium as a way to literally sedate the country of China so that they could rule over it. Like, we have to remember, they just gave back Hong Kong, I believe, in 2000, if I'm not mistaken. So 20 years ago. The sister said, they're not smarter, they're diabolical, and we're too loving. That's our wonderful producer. So the opium was a big problem, and it was something that literally kept the country sedated, allowed them to be dominated by a much smaller British force. And it's good to study these things, because a lot of times the devil, as the European like to say, the devil is in the details. Sometimes when you really look at the world map and you look at the populations that were in different European countries and look how they were able to overcome people, a lot of times we think, well, I don't know. Actually, I have no idea what we think. I guess we think a lot of times we think because they were able to do that, that they were superior. But there are a lot of different mechanisms that Europeans have used in a lot of different places. And what's funny is Black people have been subject to all of those things, while different other people have been subject to some of them. So, for example, like I said, the drugs in China, the biological warfare here in America, where they gave when they were fighting against Chief Pontiac and his confederation, they end up giving smallpox blankets to the natives there. And I can't remember the exact tribe, that exact nation. And then that's how they subdued them, because they had no immunity to smallpox, because they didn't, you know, the Europeans brought a lot of diseases. The fact, one of the things that with European conquering of other people that people don't talk about is literally the European, when he came out of Europe 500 years ago, was literally a biological weapon. They had been in so much filth and squalor and dirt and disease and degeneracy that there were some people that they simply overwhelmed, because the people had never even been introduced to these diseases and had never been introduced to this type of filth. And they were easier to conquer because the people just fell sick. Literally, the Europeans in some places were like a two-legged pestilence, and they were able to defeat some of these people, especially here in the Western Hemisphere. And you add that to the fact that many people were peaceful people that weren't a war type people. They were literally just sitting minding their business, and people come over and just murder them for no reason. They hadn't been introduced to that type of violence. the good part for us is, of course, we've been close to these people for half a millennium. The sister said they're the original COVID. That's right. So we've been introduced to them for half a millennium. So we understand, we should understand as a collective, the chances of someone changing after 500 years is the same chance that your uncle that was on crack in 84 is going to stop smoking tomorrow. If he been smoking, and y'all know y'all can find him on that same corner, he ain't going nowhere. He going to be there. And the same way he's going to be there, the European is going to continue to be what he's been, a murderer, a rapist, a torturer, that he's been. Those things shall continue. But back to the repatriation aspect, because I've gone off a little bit on a tangent. The reason that I think that this is, and understand what I'm saying when I say this, I'm not saying that 40 million black people should wake up next week, get on planes and ships, pop up on the shore of Africa and say, hey, we're back. Again, that's not realistic. It's not even. And Marcus Garvey himself said there are some people who are no good here, and they would be what? Just as no good in Africa. The people that we need to send there and the people that we need to connect with would be a people who would set up a situation in various countries where they can take in a certain amount of people. But the people you send first are people that have skills and also the mentality of African nationalism. Because we have to understand that even on the continent, they're still dealing with psychological slavery. The mere fact that the borders are the same as they were set up by the Europeans in, I believe that was 1884. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. Where the Europeans came together, I believe it's the Berlin Conference, and set up the borders that are now the borders of Africa. Those were not the original borders, nor were they the borders in, say, 1755. And part of the conflict that goes on the continent is because simply of colonial borders. That's something that I'm sure they know. But sometimes from an outside perspective, somebody has to come in and point it out to you and be like, some of your conflict is from this. Why don't you have a discussion on returning to the original borders? These two groups of people never liked each other. Why have them intermingling when one could just live on this side of the river, one can live on that side of the river? So Africa has things that it has to clean up. And there's also that mentality that black people around the world seem to have, that when the person from the outside is not like us, we want to be their friend. And when the person from the outside looks just like us, we don't want to be their friend. So that, make no mistake, I understand that Africa is not without its flaws. But at the same time, many African nations, many, have welcomed people from here in America over there. Ghana has a large community of former African Americans. And those people have gone back, they've intermarried, they set up businesses, they own property, and they made themselves a part of those communities. And especially in Ghana, I've heard nothing but the people that I know that made that move, a lot of positive reviews. In fact, there's a brother I follow, and I might have to have him on the show one time if he'd be amenable to it. He's in Tanzania having the time of his life. I mean, he just posted some pictures. He's on a yacht having a party. I mean, his brother having the time of his life. You over there met some nice looking sisters there. No disrespect to our sisters here, because you know I love y'all. But for those brothers who complain about the sisters here, just think about the fact that there's a continent with approximately 600 or so million black women of every shade, shape, and size. It's something to think about. But the idea of repatriation and the idea of being, now, the concept, the idea of being paid to leave automatically puts us in a position where if you repatriate to an African country, they're going to roll out the red carpet because what? You're coming with wealth. And I probably shouldn't even, I just thought about it. Like, I probably shouldn't even have mentioned that part, because now, while the president might be for it, some of his other people might be like, hold up. What are you doing? Because we know for a fact, everybody's going to welcome somebody with that amount of American money. Even in a time where America's economy is in turmoil, the political instability and all the other things that people see, no one at this point, not yet, is handing back or giving back American dollars. If you go to Dubai, you can spend American dollars. If you go to China, you can spend American dollars. If you go to Europe, you can spend American dollars. They're not handing them back. So imagine not even the masses of us, but a small groups of us with resources coming in to the continent. They have the natural resources there and also have many skills, because some people on the continent are extremely educated, right? Imagine the type of business infrastructure that could be built with American dollars given to American expatriates, put into African resources, and the utilization of African resources for African people. And the brother said, I've been overseas. There's definitely beautiful black women overseas. Yeah, absolutely. I've seen it. Brothers are showing me pictures. But I'm not going to lie, I'm partial to our sisters here, because they've been with us through untold horrors. Sisters say, ain't nobody going to save us but us. And so now, if you know, taking that a little further, we have people here in America who are militarily trained. How much could we improve the military situation on the continent with just bringing the information and training that we have here? We have people here who are engineers, people here who are pilots, people here who are doctors. How much better can we help improve their condition? And we have one of the things that we have that we've given to them over the last 100 years that's overlooked. And if implemented collectively, will change the game. The fact of looking at us as a collective is actually a concept largely built up and propagated in the West. If you look at most of the Pan-Africanists, even though I don't consider myself a Pan-Africanist, most of the Pan-Africanists from 100 years ago, from Garvey and before, many of them were from the Caribbean. And then they brought the ideas to America, and then from America, the ideas spread. So the idea of black people around the world being a global majority, and the idea of being a collective, and the idea of being the same people in different places, is largely an idea of displaced Africans in the West. This idea then extends to the continent, where instead of us seeing, because we haven't experienced the different quote unquote tribal strifes, we don't, to us, it's all the same people. We don't really sit around and scratching our head and be like, okay, this person is Igbo and that's Tutsi and that's Zulu, and that, we're not worried about that. At best, we identify them by country. But I've known brothers from the continent that until they open their mouth, and normally I can look and identify them. Sometimes until they open their mouth, I'm like, oh, he's from the continent. Oh. And I've had sisters now. Maybe the sisters were just saying this. They're like, oh, yeah, you look like you could be from, you know, fill in the blanks. So even the idea of us seeing ourselves in them and them seeing ourselves in us is an idea that we can give to them on a mass scale, and that will help solve some of the issues that they have, not only with us, but they have with themselves there. And that concept of oneness in and of itself would change the condition of all of us. Is one of the reasons why I think, realistically, because of the numerical disparity between black men and black women, I have no problem with black women marrying black men from other places to balance that out. Because regardless of what happened, that child's going to be black. That's why I don't give any, I don't give any excuses to swirlers, black male or black female, because there are billions of people. We have over a billion people who are black, who in fact of different shades, because they are light skinned people in Azania, South Africa. Then you have the Ethiopians. Then you have some people who are extremely melanated in Sudan. So we don't even have an excuse as far as looks. Whatever you're looking for, we have slim sisters, we have voluptuous sisters, we have brothers who are short and stocky, we got brothers, some of the Maasai almost 8 feet tall. Whatever we claim we lack physically, we have absolutely no excuse. And even though we think we're different culturally, they would still carry a lot of the cultural traits from the continent, and we don't even realize it. Simple stuff like libation. You know, when I was a youngster, you know, it was a habit of pouring out a little liquor for those who aren't here. That's libation. The sister say, yeah, give me a tall brother. I mean, they're out there. I would ask the sister how tall she is, because I find it interesting that a lot of sisters who are 5'4 and under want to take all the tall men as if there aren't sisters that are 5'8 and 5'10. But that's another show. We're not going to get into that. But I just wanted to really go through those three aspects and those three parameters. And I would say that if black people were at least given that the idea of an alternative, it would be something that we would look at. And then, of course, the sister says, I'm 5'4". I already knew that before you even said it. Um, because I don't think our people, that I don't think the idea of even running our own country occurs to black people right now. The idea that we can get away from Europeans, the idea that, that we don't have to just continue to do the same thing that we've been doing for 50 years that white people are writing hasn't worked. We've been here for at least 5 millennia amongst them. I'm talking about amongst them. And our relationship with the Europeans, for our question, is not getting any better, because we can go back 5,000 years back to ancient Kemet, like I've said previously, and we've had the same problems and the same conflict. And in fact, integration is that old because we allowed them to come into our societies then, where we were the majority, and we still end up going to war and losing the kingdom over time. So this whole integration concept is not new. And if you can't get the European to act right when you're the majority in your country, then how in the world are we going to get them to act right when we're the minority in their country? How can integration work in our benefit if we have 5,000 years of history proving it hasn't worked, didn't work in Africa, it hasn't worked in the United States of America on two different occasions? Because I have to say that integration is at least currently failing for the purposes which they state it was for, and for the purposes which we, if you ask the majority of black people, what we think we can get out of it, which was each equal treatment and equal opportunity. There's no doubt collectively that that hasn't taken place. The separation aspect, we talked about that as separate territory here within the United States. That is problematic because that which you cannot defend, you cannot keep. And then there's the repatriation aspect, which would be a process, as all these things will be a process. It's something I think we have to look at as a community. And the idea that the sister that the sister said we should present it to Mr. Trump, I'm gonna see if I can get someone a little more skilled to write that up. And I have absolutely no idea how to get it to Trump, short of, and this is going to sound hilarious, but it's probably true, short of tweeting it to him, since he's always on Twitter. Whether he would read it or not is another thing. But we know he's always on there, and we know he does respond to people. But anybody has another idea of how to possibly get it to him? But my whole thing is I just wonder how many of our people would be willing to repatriate, or even if they didn't repatriate, leave the country with that kind of wealth. Now, you know, I'm not gonna lie, a lot of our people, if you guarantee them $5 million, they'll do almost anything. And Sister Misty says maybe the Sister Angela Stanton is how to get to him. Okay, well, okay, we got some ideas. I won't even read out the ideas, because the people with the ideas I know how to contact. So yeah, we, you know, we're working with something. And this, you know, what I'll say is, for this discussion, like, share this discussion, spread it amongst people that you know, and just see what they say about that idea. And in fact, I'm gonna see if I can get this to some people over on the continent, because even though Ghana has said that they will welcome us back to there, and I think I saw maybe a couple of other countries, there are, I believe, 54, maybe 55. Sometimes you get, you know, hard to keep up, countries in Africa. And there is a large portion of Africa that is filled with invaders who do not belong there. That's all I'm going to say to that. But that's just an idea that, first of all, that's just a fact. And that's just an idea that I've had for a long time. And even though that area looks like it does not have resources, we know it does have resources, because if it didn't, then Muammar Gaddafi would still be alive. There are resources underneath that sand, believe me. But I'm just going to leave that idea out there. And the sister said that she is definitely repatriating. She's not even going to wait for the check. She's just leaving. She's just packing up, rolling out. But I want to announce what we're going to do next week, we're going to have a panel discussion. We're going to have a black male-female relationship panel discussion. And we're going to take questions from people in the chat and also people on Instagram and maybe even people on Twitter. So I haven't, the exact date and time I should have finalized now. I have not, but I'm going to say Saturday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And Sister Sanaa J is actually scheduled to be one of our panelists. And so, first of all, what do y'all think about that idea for the show? Even though I'm going to do it anyway. This is to say, which sexy brothers will you have on the panel so I can take my pick? I don't know if... I'm not sure if you know these brothers or not, but there's some brothers that I know from, well, actually the two brothers I know are actually, I know them personally. And then, so I'm gonna have two brothers, two sisters, and myself. I may ask my wonderful producer that co-host this event with me. And yeah, we're just going to have a good panel discussion. So if you have any questions that you would like to ask the complementary gender, send those questions to, you can send those questions to StraightBlackPride_DC@ProtonMail.com. Again, that is StraightBlackPride_DC@ProtonMail.com. And what is our wonderful producer talking about? She's cracking jokes. So send your questions there for the opposing gender. We're going to pick a group of questions, and we're going to give those questions to the panel and have them discuss them, excuse me. And I will, I'll be moderating with our wonderful producer more than likely. And we're just going to have a good discussion between black men and black women. It's going to probably get raw, as those discussions always do. But I think it's a timely discussion because realistically, as Proton Mail, Philly, Ebate, and, you know, it's always time for those discussions. It's always good for us to talk to each other and always good to try to have good communication and try to air out some things. And we're going to have, of course, some ground rules set in place. Those of you who are familiar with Straight Black Pride and what we do, of course, we have a no N-word policy. We also have a no B and H policy. I will make sure I have the technology in place that if people are not in accordance with the rules and the parameters that would be set in place, we will find a way to remove them from the panel, which means I guess I need to have some backup panelists just in case. But that's something I'm looking forward to. That's going to be Saturday, the 11th at 8 p.m. You know, we're just going to have some straight talk between black men and black women. And also, I want to announce, even though this is not my event whatsoever, the following week after that, Baba Walimu Baruti is having his complementarity conference. And the complementarity conference is going to be online. And that event is called Building African Love. And that's going to be Saturday, July 18th, 2020, from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m. It's going to have lectures, breakout sessions, and a collective discussion. And that is $10 per adult. And then someone asked, what are the age ranges? What are the age ranges for the panelists? I believe the youngest panelist we have is 24, and the oldest panelist might be in their early 30s. So the panelists we have is the millennial generation. You know, that's the generation that really should be looking for compliments and looking to come together to build families. That's the generation that I think doesn't really get. They aren't really taught the importance of family from what I've seen. But just because those are the panelists doesn't mean they're the only people who are going to give questions and give discussion. Now, someone asked me, and I don't know how I could do it, but if I could find a way to do it, because we currently not going to do the singles mixers. We're not going to do the singles mixers the week of the Straight Black Pride Convention. Someone asked me, when will we continue that again? You know, I'm not sure, to be honest. You know, everything's contingent upon various governmental guidelines, and y'all know how it is. We're in the age of COVID. We know. So wherever you are in America, if you're in America, you understand you're in some type of phase 1 or phase 2 or maybe even phase 3, or you were in phase 2 and you're going back to phase 1, and some places out here are shutting down more than they shut down before they started. So a lot of things are contingent upon what the rules that are set forth in place. And Russ said, you do want to drive up for the Straight Black Pride event. Yeah, the Straight Black Pride Convention is going to be in August. Let me draw up my calendar. Sister Misty still here, because I know she knows. Be August 22nd and 23rd. So we will So we will be in Everlasting Life Cafe, 9185 Central Avenue, Capitol Heights, Maryland. And the sister says, can I facilitate a virtual mixer? That's something that I thought about. People have asked. I don't actually know. You know, that's something I had to discuss. I'm not sure. I'm not even sure how that would work, to be honest. I wouldn't mind doing it. I just wouldn't really know how it would work. And the question is, I thought it was July 25th. You thought what was July 25th? If you're talking about the Straight Black Pride Convention, it's in August. It's definitely in August. It's August 22nd and 23rd. No, the 25th is the, no, that's the African Survival in the 21st Century lecture. That is July 25th. And that starts, doors open at 2 p.m. And I believe you can get tickets via Eventbrite. Right, sister. That's right. So, brothers and sisters, as much as I am enjoying interacting with you all, I have to get off of here. That's all my time. Please join us Saturday night. I may also do a live stream Sunday, but again, Saturday night, 8 p.m., we're going to have that discussion between black male female relationships from a single perspective, and really from a single conscious perspective, because most of the people, I think everybody has some level of consciousness. So since we won't have Negroes on the panel, we should have good conduct. And if not, good conduct will be enforced. So with that, brothers and sisters, again, I appreciate your support. I appreciate you listening to the live stream. I appreciate you supporting Straight Black Pride, supporting On the Wake Up Radio. And with that, I say a BB for Hodie and Straight Black Pride.
Heavily flawed individual.
Cindy Ashby Production.
On the Wake Up.